Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to an Easter Sunday edition of Philly Fanatics, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz and Josh Landsberg. And we are here to talk Villanova basketball to start things off. Villanova returns to the Final Four, first time since 2009. Or, as some T-shirts read yesterday, is it not 2009, but is it 1985 all over again? Let's talk about last night's game first, and that was a win over top seed Kansas, 64-59. Not an artistic success, but really a tough, gutty victory for the Wildcats. Josh, let's start with you. What most impressed you about Villanova yesterday?
Well, I think what most impressed me was how they were able to play with foul trouble. They had a lot of foul trouble throughout the game. One of their stars had four fouls out for most of the second half. I think that the way they played through adversity really impressed me. They had a lot of foul trouble throughout that game and were able to play through the adversity. They had guys step up. They really played a team game. Everyone played well for them. And the way they played defense against Kansas was really impressive as well. So I think that just the way they played through adversity, the way they played through foul trouble was really impressive, and just an overall impressive win against the number one overall seed in the tournament in Kansas. And you mentioned 1985 to 1985 all over again. Well, that's if they win it all, of course. But, of course, in 1985, different story. They were a number eight seed, and they had a huge upset win against Georgetown. This was an upset win as well, but they were only a two-point underdog in this game, so not a huge upset. And they're a number two seed this year. So the expectations a little bit higher this year probably than they were back in 1985.
Good points, Josh. Excellent points. Gordon, how about you? What were you most impressed with from Villanova yesterday?
Well, certainly down the stretch. I mean, they, I always butcher his name, Archer, whatever, yo. He made a couple really clutch foul shots, you know, that were huge. And, you know, and like Josh said, I mean, the thing that was impressed me about Villanova all year is their depth. You know, they can have foul trouble. And or have guys, certain guys have been off games and other people can pick it up. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that a team that's going to go far, and obviously Final Four is pretty far, needs. So, I mean, they showed those things. You know, they showed dealing with adversity, and they showed that, you know, if certain guys are in foul trouble, other people can kind of fill the gap. So that certainly impressed me, you know. And, you know, we'll see what happens from here. The further you go, the harder the competition is. And, you know, everybody you're facing now has had a magical run and has played their best basketball like Villanova has. So we'll just have to see what happens. But, whether, you know, to your question, if it's 1985 all over again. But that was certainly, I mean, you don't get much tougher than Kansas. And, you know, every time you look at a mock draft, you always see, you know, guys from Kansas every year. And, you know, just like you do Kentucky. And, you know, that's a premier program, not that Villanova isn't, but it's, you know, it's a year in, year out, you know, top 10, top five program. And to knock them off on that kind of stage is really impressive.
Gordon, you mentioned the draft picks. I mean, had there not been, leaving early for the NBA, early decision, had that been illegal, Joel Embiid, although he would have been hurt, would have been on this Kansas team, as would Andrew Wiggins, for that matter. I mean, they've had a string of top players come out of there. Josh, you mentioned, first of all, the foul trouble and how the Wildcats were able to withstand that foul trouble. You had Chris Jenkins picking up his third and fourth foul in quick succession there early in the second half. And you're right, they were able to survive that. And the other part you mentioned was their defense and this adversity. And one of the keys to this game was Perry Ellis, the star forward for Kansas. I had no points in the first half, and was only held, and only had four to finish, and he really only got five shots off. They couldn't even get him the ball where he wanted it. He only got five shots the whole game. Josh, how did Villanova do that?
Yeah, that was really impressive. I thought one of the things that was going to give Villanova trouble was Perry Ellis. He's by far Kansas' best player, and he's had a great tournament and has really been a great player for them. And I thought that they were going to struggle having Perry Ellis having a good game against them, but they really didn't. They really played him well. They fronted the ball. They got in front of him. They didn't allow the ball, as you mentioned, to get into the post. They kind of pushed him out of the post area. They got him out of his range. They put two guys on him at times. They had they really played great defense, great team defense overall, and it denied him the ball. They didn't let him get into a zone, into a rhythm at all. He just had a horrible game for Kansas. And you got to give Villanova credit, though. They did a great job defending him. They really made it, I think Jay Wright made it his priority to shut down Perry Ellis and let the rest of Kansas beat you, and the rest of Kansas wasn't able to beat him. It was really a situation where Perry Ellis was going to have a good game for them to win this game, and he didn't have a good game. So I think that Villanova did a great job denying him the ball, as I mentioned, and pushing him out past the inside the lane, pushing him out past the lane area, and I think that's what they did to be successful against Perry Ellis in Kansas.
Thanks, Josh. Gordon, you mentioned Arcee Diakono earlier, although you didn't say his name, but don't worry, Kenny Smith couldn't say his name last night either on on CBS. What type of, just, you know, this is one of these guys, you see him, you know, these local guys from Langhorn, and you see what he does in crunch time and in big moments. And then yesterday was his 22nd birthday, which is why our story on PhillyTonight.com is titled Birthday Celebration. He just comes up with, you know, what is it about guys like this that see, and you've seen, Gordon, you've covered a lot of basketball in your day, pro, college, high school. What is it about players like Arcee Diakono, and it always seems to be a point guard, who come up with these big plays in big moments, even if they're not necessarily the most talented guy on the team? You know, what is it about that type of player that makes, you know, I guess it makes them excel in those situations?
You know, it's just something in their makeup. I mean, I think it transcends, I mean, you mentioned basketball players, but I mean, you know, there's quarterbacks that maybe have horrible games, and then they get one last shot to drive the team down the field in the last 2 minutes, and they do it. And, you know, there's players in baseball who've always had great postseasons. Maybe they're 250 hitters, but, you know, they manage to, you know, pick it up in the postseason. And, you know, it's just the makeup of a guy when the stage gets bigger and they realize the importance. And, you know, in his case, I guess when it gets to crunch time in a game, I think a big part of it in his case, I think there's just a basketball IQ, you know, and that's the kind of thing you can't really, there's a lot of things you can teach, a lot of things you can't teach. He knows the game. When you understand the game, you have a certain kind of inner confidence of reading what's going to happen, and you get to that point in the game where it's really, you know, you have to make key decisions and quick decisions, and other players may be getting a little antsy, a little nervous, and they're not quite thinking as clearly because of where they are in the game and that stage of the game. You get a guy like that, he's still, because he has that basketball IQ and a full understanding of the situation and you know, and the fact he's a point guard and the ball's going to be in his hands just enhances that. So, you know, I think that's a big part of it as well. I mean, he, the ball's in his hands. He kind of knows where his teammates are going to be. He knows where he needs to be. He can maybe exploit players on other teams who are maybe not handling the situations the way they should. And, you know, and then once you do it, once you prove yourself as a clutch, crunch time kind of player, you just feed off of that as your career develops. And I think one more thing that needs to be mentioned, and you mentioned, you know, he's 22 years old. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, you mentioned Wiggins and Embiid earlier. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, don't stay in school for the full run. And I think, you know, I think you see, maybe they don't make the best NBA players. They don't make NBA players at all. But I think the guys who stay in and they play 3-4 years of college basketball, I think we see the difference, you know, in the tournament. I think you have to throw all those things in and factor it all in. But, and then there's just a natural makeup of a kid. He's a competitor.
Yeah, you know, Gordon, when filling out my pool, one of the things I always look for, and I'm not always right, but is experience. I like those veteran teams. I like, just going back to the first round of this tournament, it's why I liked Hawaii to upset California. And not only do I like Hawaii as a team, but the 13th team, but you know, those are all veteran guys, and California might have two lottery picks on their team, but they're freshmen. And they're young, and I'd go the same thing with one reason I like Stephen F. Austin is those guys are all, you know, seniors, have been in the tournament before and pulled off an upset before, and I said, well, you know, why not? So you're right, those veteran guys stick around, get the experience, seem to be better players. I do want one guy I don't want to leave out, Daniel Chefu, who had a terrific game. That's not the one I was talking about. But a guy who doesn't get a lot of attention is Michael Bridges. And it, you know, he came in and was very important yesterday, had five steals. And he was the guy at the end who had to, when Arcidiakono knocked the ball out of Mason's hands. You know, Bridges is the one who jumped on it and you know, called the timeout and hit the two free throws then after that. Pretty good for a redshirt freshman, and he was a really important part of last night's win, including, as Josh pointed out, you know, adding that depth and versatility to their lineup when they're missing guys or guys aren't playing that well. They have guys like Bridges who come in and do a really nice job. Let's before we leave Villanova, let's look ahead. Josh, they have a tough task ahead of them here. Oklahoma, they played way back on December 7th in the Pearl Harbor Invitational, and Oklahoma really thumped Villanova 77-55. Speeding up to modern times, I mean, to talk about guys who've been around and really have a tough time with, that's Buddy Hield, who dropped 37 yesterday on Oregon. What's the challenge with Oklahoma, and you know, what's going to be different for Villanova than it was back on December 7th?
Well, in terms of what's going to be different, I think they have a lot more experience. I mean, that was early on in the season. They hadn't really hit their stride yet. They played much better down the stretch the rest of the season and got as high as the number one overall seed in the country and for a little bit. And they weren't ready for Oklahoma when they played them back on December 7th, as you mentioned. And I think this is going to be a great game. You know, my bracket, I had Oklahoma before the tournament winning it all. So Oklahoma, you know, they're right there in the Final Four. So it, you know, looks like a pretty good pick. But Buddy Hield was the reason for that. He's just an unbelievable player. He's having a great tournament. But there are other guys on this team too. It's not just Buddy Hield. There are other guys that can play for this team too. And there are guys that step up. When Buddy Hield had 17 points a couple games ago, there are other guys that stepped up and played well for them. So I think it's going to be a really tough test for Villanova, but I think they can win this game. I think it's, you know, it's a rematch game. That's always fun when you have that situation. They got embarrassed the first time they played them, but being able to guard Buddy Hield, you may have to double cover him at times. And the way they shut down Terry Ellis, they may have the same game plan they had against Kansas, against Oklahoma. Jay Wright may institute the same game plan. You know, we're not going to let Oklahoma's best player beat us. We're going to shut down Buddy Hield as much as possible, and we're going to see if the rest of Oklahoma can beat us. And if they do, so be it. But we're going to do our best to not let Buddy Hield get, you know, more than 20 points or have a great game against us, certainly not 37. And we're going to deny the three-point line. Buddy Hield is a guy who likes to sit around the three-point line. He can hit a shot from anywhere behind the arc, really. He's got great range. He can hit it from NBA range. He's a guy that can drive a little bit too, but he likes to sit around the three-point line and hit those shots. They're just like kind of the opposite of Terry Ellis, just like they denied Terry Ellis the ball down low and tried to stop him from getting shots in the paint. They're going to try to do the opposite and try to stop Buddy Hield from getting shots from the three-point line. So I think that's what we're going to see out of Villanova. And from Oklahoma, they're going to, if Buddy Hield is, he's not going to be able to be completely shut down, but if he's slowed down a little bit, they're going to have their other guys, their point guard and their other players, step up for them and play well. But I think this is a great matchup. We're going to see a great game, a similar game against Kansas where, you know, it's back and forth and a close game, and you don't know which team's going to win it until the very end. And I think it's going to be a very good game. And just, the, you know, one other point about Archie Diacono, Ryan Archie Diacono, who had a pretty good game for Villanova. He had a really weak first half, actually, but had a much better second half in that game and hit some key foul shots down the stretch. But he's a four-year captain, and you don't see that too often in college basketball. We have a four-year captain. So that's really impressive that he's, you know, was captain as a freshman, and he's a guy who's been around. He's a senior now, and he's leading his team, and he's, you know, maybe not the best player on the team, but he's kind of the heart and soul of the Villanova team, and he's able to guide his team to victory so far throughout the tournament, and we'll see if he can do it again against Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know if he's their best player. That's debatable. But I think he's, Josh, you're right, he's their most valuable player. I mean, you know, he's the guy who sets the tone and keeps under control. And you're right, that's just a great point about being a four-year captain. I mean, it's so unusual to have a guy named the captain as a freshman. But it tells you, you know, how impressed the coaching staff and the players were with him. That because obviously there could be resentment. You know, if the players weren't accepting that, obviously there'd be resentment. And there wasn't. And he's just, they knew his leadership from the beginning. They recognized it. And he is a great captain. Yep, Oklahoma, that'll be Saturday. Villanova versus Oklahoma. Truth in Advertising, although in the PhillyFanatics.com bracket madness pool, which I'm leading, I had Kansas winning it all. I will say I played two other pools. I played three other pools. And two of those other ones, I did pick Oklahoma to win it. So I will be rooting against myself because certainly I'd prefer the Villanova win. But we'll see what happens. All right, let's switch topics, Gordon. Let's move on to the Flyers, who, despite a 2-1 loss last night in Arizona to the Coyotes, a game in which they actually played pretty well. Mike Smith, the other goalie, made 34 saves. They are in position here with 8 games left in the season. They are tied for the final playoff berth in the Eastern Conference, and they actually have a game in hand on the Red Wings. So how do you feel? So we talked last week. Now we've gone through this week where they did blow a game in Columbus, losing lead in the final minute and 4 seconds, 2 goals in the last minute 4. They had last night's game, but they also won a couple games in there against the Islanders, and now I'm blanking on the other again, Colorado. Two pretty well-played wins. They didn't win by luck. It was a good fortune. They deserve to win both those games. Gordon, how do you feel about them now? 8 games to go, tied for the 8th position. Do you think they're going to make it?
I mean, it could go either way. I mean, they have to win the close games. I mean, the style the Flyers play, and they just seem to find themselves in a lot of those games that go to overtime, that go to shootouts, they're clinging to a 1-goal lead late with a goalie pulled it, or they had the goalie pulled and they're trying to, to force the game into overtime. They have to find a way to at least steal a point when they're not going to get a point or to get that second point. That's going to make the difference, I think, ultimately. And, we've kind of seen really a big dichotomy with them, in the 3-on-3 in the overtimes, they're a pretty good team. When they get to the shootout, they're horrible. So, I'd like to see them settle the issue in regulation, even if it's 2-1, 1-0, whatever. Find a way to settle the issue in regulation and not have to put it to chance, in overtime and then the ridiculous skills competition that is a shootout. I have a feeling. Just a gut feeling. Maybe I'll feel differently a week from now. I have a gut feeling that they're going to come up just short. I don't know why. I'm going to the game Wednesday, and it'll be great. It'll be kind of a playoff feel in the air, which is great, this late in the season. But I just think the things come back to haunt you and they start the season slowly. It's understandable, new coach coming up from the college ranks, and I think really Hakstol has done a good job, and a lot of this late season push is a credit to him. But I just think that comes back to haunt you in the end, and it puts you in a situation now where there's almost zero margin for error. I don't put that much stock in games in hand. I mean, that could just turn on it. You could play that game, the extra game that you have, and lose, and then it turns against you. So, gut instinct, maybe they come up a little short, but we'll just deal with that. Let's see how this week goes, and then. We'll see again. I don't want to be – I'll just put that in pencil. I don't want to put it in ink yet because I do like a lot of things I'm seeing with this team. I just – it's going to take a lot.
Okay, don't wear your Wilbert Montgomery jersey, please, at the game.
I will not. I got a Bobby Clark jersey, and they won last time I wore through a game.
I hope that has better luck than your Wilbert Montgomery jersey.
Yeah.
Josh,
Eric, now I wore it to a game and they won. It was against Boston, and Zach Rinaldo scored a goal in that game. So that shirt really has some magic in it.
For the Flyers or for the Bruins?
For the Flyers.
Okay. See, by the way, Gordon, I don't know if you followed what's happened to Zach Rinaldo this year, but I haven't looked recently. But the Bruins finally sent him down after he picked up another undisciplined penalty and got suspended. And I believe in the minors, like his first game there, he also did something like way out of bounds. And I forget exactly what the infraction was. It was a couple weeks ago or maybe a month ago even at this point. And I believe he got suspended indefinitely down there. I don't know if he's back playing or not, but discipline continues to be an issue for Zach Rinaldo. Josh, around the trade deadline, we were talking about maybe trading goalies and possibly Michael Neuwirth going. Although now he's been sidelined by an injury and they've been forced to rely on Steve Mason. This past week, they beat the Islanders with Steve Mason. He plays back-to-back games. He makes 50. He's playing very well against the Islanders. 23 saves, but some of them were spectacular. He makes 51 saves in the shootout loss to Columbus, and certainly even the shootout. Columbus didn't score until the fifth round of the shootout. He's played, you know, pretty well. And last night, of his two goals, and Gordon and I talked about this off the air, the second goal, you know, Max Domi, knocked Mason's mask around, and he couldn't see anything, and really the play should have been stopped, and certainly the goal should have been disallowed. But Steve Mason's going to play a lot, and I would even hazard a guess that, you know, if the Flyers don't get a little bit of a, you know, if they don't win a couple and get a cushion on Detroit, he might play every game. Are you comfortable with that now, the way Steve Mason's playing?
Yeah, he's playing really well. You kind of wish they did trade Michael Norris at the trade deadline. Of course, he's hurt now. I said at the time they should have traded him, but unfortunately they didn't make a trade and didn't get any players for him, and now he's sidelined with the injury. But in terms of relying on Steve Mason, I think that's okay. I think he should play every game down the stretch here. I think that hopefully they don't have too many back-to-backs these next eight games. Hopefully they have some games spread out a little bit so he can get a little bit of rest. But I think that it's okay to rely on him. He's played great. He's one of the better goaltenders in the league, and he really has led this team to some victories. And if you had to ask my gut opinion, I'd go against Gordon, go against the grain a little bit. I think that the Flyers will make the playoffs. I think they will sneak in there as the eighth seed and make it into the postseason in a year where a lot of people didn't think they would make the playoffs. So we'll see what happens these last eight games. But I think that they're going to rely on Steve Mason. They're going to rely on some of their younger players to step up, continue to play well, and they should just barely get into the playoffs.
Yeah, he played the back-to-back last week with the Islanders, this past week with the Islanders and Columbus. They have a back-to-back next weekend with the Penguins, home and home with the Penguins, which will be a huge set, obviously. And boy, the blue, that place will be loud next Saturday, Wells Fargo Center. And then the last set involves that makeup game with the Islanders, which will be the last game of the season where they would play a Sunday-Monday. I guess for sure he'll play that back. But that's asking a lot of a goalie, but he's been great so far. I don't think anybody has any complaints. He's been terrific under this situation. So they do play Winnipeg Monday, Washington on Wednesday that Gordon's going to, and then the home-and-home with the Penguins. So it'll be quite a week for the Flyers, really important week. And we'll see if Anthony Stolarz gets a start in there somewhere. But maybe not. Maybe if it's because the Penguins, the game's being at the end of that week. You would think Mason plays both of those. If they had that back-to-back early in the week, I think you would have seen Stolarz against Winnipeg. But I'm not sure we'll see him. We'll have to see what happens. So big week for the Flyers. Big week for Villanova, big week for the Flyers. Gordon, wasn't as big a week for the Eagles, but there was a lot of Eagles news this past week. I don't want to get into Jeffrey Lurie's comments. But on the field, or off the field if you want to say it, but related to on the field, they quietly signed Reuben Randle to a contract. Gordon, what does this do for the receiver core?
Well, I think, and you also have to factor in that they signed Chris Givens, I guess a week earlier, and he was a guy who played in St. Louis who, had his best year. I mean, best is in quotes because it certainly wasn't anything to, write home about, but it was, over 40 catches and a lot of yards per catch. And he kind of had a little bit of symmetry with Bradford when they played together with the former St. Louis Rams, now the Los Angeles Rams. And so they signed Givens and as a deep threat who can kind of take the top off of defense. And they come back with, Reuben Randle, who's been sort of an enigma because he has the pedigree. I mean, you're talking about a second-round pick at LSU with size and speed, sub-4.5, about 6'2 or 6'3, over 200 pounds. Everything is there, yet he hasn't really – I mean, he had a good year 2 years ago. I think he had over 70 catches, but hasn't really turned into the star receiver that he should be. And you hope maybe, and not that this is any kind of juggernaut offense. But I think what it does, it gives them a guy who at least is a pro receiver. Maybe he may not be a star receiver. He may not be a guy who's ever reached his potential. But it gives them another guy, and as well as Givens. And what it does, it now takes a little bit of pressure off to go and draft a receiver I'm sure they'll add a receiver at some point in the draft, but they don't necessarily have to do it now. They won't in the first round. I think true Laquon Treadwell was in play if they had the 13th pick. Once they move up to 8th, he's not in play anymore. And even with one of the third-round picks, they don't necessarily have to go receiver now. They can if there's somebody they really like or somebody slides down there that they like. But, you know, they can maybe focus on other needs because they kind of at least have, you know, the two guys they signed along with Aguilar and Matthews. You know, Aguilar's a guy who has a lot to prove. And then you still have Huff. Although I'm still not 100% convinced Huff will be here, wouldn't be surprised if they try to move him to Chip Kelly. If there's any justice in the world, the 49ers should give a third-round pickup for Huff. But, you know, Josh Huff is still here as well. So, you know, but if Huff is here, that gets you five receivers. You don't necessarily have to draft anybody. So at least signing those two guys, you kind of cover yourself a little bit. So, you know, is Reuben Randall a star? But no, but, you know, there weren't really a lot of those kind of receivers out there in free agency. And in terms of tier two type guys, I guess you could do better, but you could do worse. Playing in the division helps. You probably have a familiarity with a lot of the defensive backs he goes against and who he can put moves on and who he can't. And, you know, including some of the Eagles, guys over the years, but because he has made Eagles over the years, but I can't say I really am against the signing. You know, it's one of those things that it's you know, can't hurt, maybe can help a little. I don't think ultimately it's going to make a huge difference, but it takes a little bit of heat off the younger receivers. Matthews continues to establish himself, cuts down the drops. I think he can be a very good receiver, and maybe takes a little bit of heat off a guy like Aguilar. So, you know, but I kind of look at Randall and Givens in tandem as something that kind of helps their depth in their receiving core.
Yeah, I feel a lot better with Randall there. I just, even if he takes up one spot, like you said, whether it's the number two spot or number three spot, he's an NFL receiver. How good he still is, you know, like you said, remains to be seen, but he's an NFL receiver. And you know, Josh Huff, I hate to say it, I don't think they're getting a third round pick back for him, Gordon. I think they'll be lucky to get a five or a six down there, based on what he's done so far. Josh, let's briefly switch to gears here to the 76ers. In my Sixers notebook this past week, and they lost a pair of heartbreakers. Moutier's leaning three-pointer on Wednesday night was about as bad as, you know, a 35-footer was just about as bad as the toughest shot as you can lose on. They lose again. They tie the game last night, come back, tie at 105-105. Portland, C.J. McCollum scores. Old-fashioned three-point play beats them. But my question I asked in my column, in my notebook the other day, is they're nine. They still got that nine there. I've got 9-64 now. Josh, could they tie the record for the worst record ever in history for a full season?
Well, I think they definitely can. They don't have much time left. But that was as good an opportunity as any to get their 10th win of the season, and they didn't get it. They had a horrible ending to that game, and as you described very well. So I don't know if there's anyone left on their schedule that they can beat down the stretch here. I think that it's you know, probably a likelihood that they do end up with nine wins and tie the worst record in basketball history. Their own record in 72-73, they went 9-73 that season. They could go 9-73 again. And also another record that I mentioned early on in the season that I thought would happen, which is very interesting, is that the Warriors would have less losses than the Sixers have wins. And it looks like that's going to happen too. The Warriors, of course, going after the Bulls record of 72-10. And I believe they have six losses on the season right now. So they have to have two losses the rest of the way to have less losses than the Sixers have wins.
Yeah. And the Sixers play at Golden State tonight. I think it's unlikely that either equation will change tonight. I don't think the Sixers are going to get that 10th win. And, Josh, I don't think the Warriors are going to get that 8th loss tonight. The Sixers do have a couple teams left, non-playoff teams left in their schedule. They have two games with Charlotte this week, which doesn't help them. But I believe they play the Pelicans at some point, and they play the Knicks at some point. Unfortunately, they don't have the Nets, which is the only team they've beaten since like January 26th or something. They beat the Nets twice. They haven't beaten any other team. So we'll see how that goes. All right, we're going to do final thoughts on the other side. Just pointing out for those listening, our next week's show will probably be at a different time. I don't know the exact time. We're trying to line up a guest. The availability of the guest will depend on the show. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com and Villanova stories, Flyer stuff, Sixer stuff, all sorts of great stuff with more to come. WrestleMania stuff coming this week as well. So thank you for listening. And that's it for our live section. Gordon, I wanted to ask you one last thing, little Phillies news. They extended Pete McCannon for an extra year. He had 1 year left. And now they've basically signed him for the next two with an option for 2018. Is that a reflection that they're impressed with him, or is it a case of, just they don't want him to be a lame duck, or what do you think? Gordon, are you there? Gordon's not there. Josh, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, you take that question then. So Pete McCannon, they extended him an extra year. So instead of this being his last year with an option for 2017, now his contract runs through 2017 with an option for 2018. Do you think it's a reflection of they're impressed with Pete McCannon, or do you think it's a case they just don't want to be a lame duck going through his last year?
No, I think it's a reflection that they're impressed with him, the first one of the two. You never want to have a lame duck coach. It's a tough situation to be in, but I think it's more the former than the latter. I think they're impressed with him. I think that they like the way that he coaches the young players. They like a lot about him, and I think that by extending his contract, that's showing good faith. That's showing that they're impressed with him, and they think he's the guy to kind of guide this rebuilding process. They have a lot of young players on this team, a lot of young pitchers, a lot of young players, Mikel Franco, Dubo Herrera, some of the position players they have that are young and that are talented. And they think that Pete McCannon is the guy that can guide these young players to getting back to within contention. I think, this year is going to be another down year. Maybe 2017 is another down year, but maybe 2018 is when they make their turnaround and push for playoff contention again in just a couple years. So, we saw with the Houston Astros how they were bad for a long time, and they went from last to first place just last season, and you never know what can happen. The 1993 Phillies went from last to first, so not saying that's going to happen this season, but, I think it's a situation where the Phillies can get back on track in just a couple short years.
Yeah, we'll be talking a lot of Phillies next week, although I have to say we'll probably be talking a lot of Villanova as well. It'll still be our Phillies preview show, but instead of being almost all Phillies, I think we're going to have to mix in some Villanova Final Four talk and some Flyers from the middle of the Flyers-Penguins weekend. All right, Josh Gordon has dropped off. I'm not sure what happened to his call there. So let's go to final thoughts, and you start.
Well, I'll just quickly, two final thoughts. I'll quickly comment on the Eagles. Since I didn't get a chance, I think that the Ruben Randle signing is a good signing. I think it's a good move, and they have a number two wide receiver to go along with Jordan Matthews, who might not even be a number one, but he's a guy that is certainly talented, and Nelson Aguilar is young and not a number two wide receiver yet. So I think signing Ruben Randle is a good move. And then I'll go to college basketball, and my Indiana Hoosiers go down. I got to kind of talk about them, even though it's a horrible loss. They didn't come to play. North Carolina, though, they just hit every shot they took. It was unbelievable. Marcus Page had an unbelievable game, their guard. And it just seemed like they didn't miss one shot they took. They were hitting everything. And they really looked like the national champions to me. I think that, I picked Oklahoma to win it all. Villanova looks good. It could be a Villanova-North Carolina matchup. It could be Oklahoma-North Carolina. But if I had to pick it right now, I think North Carolina's going to win it all. They just really impressed me a lot. And I think that they're a really strong team. They, Charles Barkley does the analysis. Sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I don't. But one of the comments that I do agree with him is that he said if North Carolina plays up to their talent level and plays that no one can beat them, he said that. He also said that they can get beat if they kind of just rely on their talent and don't give enough effort. And they certainly came to play. They gave a lot of effort. They have a great coach in Roy Williams. And I think that if I had to pick it right now, I think they're going to win the national championship this year.
Well, there you go. Charles, for all Charles Clowney, he's a very astute observer. And for the Villanova game, he made the point, by the way, that Buddy Hield, not all the time, but when Buddy Hield shoots three-pointers, he almost always, ends up going to his left. I mean, he might fake one way or whatever, but he almost always taking that dribble to the left to put himself in rhythm for that shot. pretty good observation. Villanova hopefully was paying attention to some. I know they were at the game, but hopefully somebody Villanova related was paying attention when Charles said that. Because you're right, he's very astute. By the way, well, if you're listening to it now, it's in archive anyway, so you already know the result. But Josh, just a little update: a team that's been overlooked because they were considered the weakest number one seed, and that's Virginia, is up 35-21 at halftime on Syracuse. So just to throw that out there. Final thought: Gordon's not with us, so I'm gonna do Gordon's final thought for him because I think I know that this would be Gordon's final thought. And really sad news this past week: Kevin Turner passed away after I believe a 6-year battle with ALS. And Kevin Turner was one of the really toughest guys to come through the Eagles. You know, great personality, but really a tough guy. And I mean that in the best sense of the word. I don't mean a brawler, tough guy. I mean just determination, heart, team player. Teammates loved him. And just to see him, I mean, deteriorate from ALS over the years, and no question he was brave in that fight. He also was one of the guys who, you know, he said his condition was related to his football playing days. I don't know the science on that. I know more, a little more, not a lot, but I know a little bit more about the relation to concussions and that type of thing. I don't know, you know, the exact how it relates to ALS. But, I mean, I've heard Kevin Turner talk about it. I just don't know, you know, if he's right or not. But certainly had to be really sad for him, knowing that in his mind, the game he loved and the game he was so dedicated to, in his mind, is what caused his condition. And that's got to be so tough for all these guys who are going through concussion issues or what they believe to be concussion-related issues, who now are having memory loss and can't remember things, and you know, quality of life has dropped tremendously. And it really adds, I don't know, you know, will it make me stop watching football? I don't think so, but it really, in fact, I can say no, it won't, but it really makes me take pause and you know, these guys who we respect for playing so hard, and wonder what it's doing to them and to their bodies. And certainly it's so sad to see Kevin Turner gone and to see what he's had to go through the last 6 years. So I'm sure that was going to be Gordon's final thought, and I hope I said it as eloquently as he would have. I'll just, to end the show on a more positive note, I'll just say what a great week this is going to be. Villanova, the build-up to the Final Four, we haven't had this in this town since 2009. And far too infrequently. Might have to update our PhillyFanatics.com list with the top 10 postseason runs in Big Five history, or city history, because I think this one's going to get in there. And it'll be a very exciting week and an exciting weekend with the Final Four starting next Saturday in Houston. The Flyers, obviously, it's an exciting week for them. Pushing for the playoff spot. Got a couple really key games, the Jets and the Capitals. And, of course, next weekend, the doubleheader with the Penguins, the back-to-back games. And, Josh, what's coming up next week, next Monday? Start of Philly season. Phillies are playing. Yeah, they're playing, they're playing the Reds, so they get that first game. So we're only opening 8 days away from Philly season. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Opening day, very exciting.
Yeah, and because, like I said, because they're playing Cincinnati, they get that traditional first game Cincinnati always gets. So 8 days away. So we'll be talking about that. So a lot happening here in Philadelphia. And, of course, the Sixers, hopefully not, but, you know, pursuing or trying not to get the record. But this week doesn't look so good, at least early in the week, with Golden State tonight and a pair of games against the Hornets on Tuesday and Friday. Not sure. I think we might still be talking about this next Sunday as well. So that's it for this week's show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For Josh Landsberg, Gordon Glantz, I am Eric Fisher. Hope everybody had a happy holiday, and we will talk to you next week.